Now it's a real privilege to have Phil Altmark come speak to us. I don't know how long this has been going on, that we've had the Youth and Gospel Mission coming. I've been here 18 years, and it was going on before I got here. So I don't know if Phil knows either, because he's so young, it probably went before him. But anyway, it's always a privilege to have Phil come and to share with us the tremendous work that the Lord is doing in the Union Gospel Mission and in the Spokane area. So, Phil?
Well, it's great to be with you, and I can answer that question, how long? I said that, I was thinking of that song, how long has this been going on? Okay. So, I'll tell you how long. I've been at the mission 31 years. And before I was there, my dad and mom used to come down here. And they were there 8 years. So do the math. 39 years at least. So how many go back that far? I love it. Yeah, yeah. So, Christina, I was thinking as you were talking about sewing, I walked in here this morning and I asked Steve, who put this together? Who put this together? Who did this? Who? Christina did? Well, how appropriate that you would talk about sowing and that one seed would produce that and to think that what God wants to produce. It's amazing. And your passage out of Galatians, do not lose heart. I cannot think of a better passage for pastors. It's not easy. You know? I'm glad I don't have to stand up every Sunday and be evaluated. I love that. And, you know, you're talking about Pastor Floyd. He was here when I came down years ago. And Craig, as you were singing your song, God brought to my memory all those that have faithfully poured into my life so I could do what I do today. And if it wouldn't have been for those faithful Sunday school teachers, for those pastors that opened up the Word and challenged me, if it wouldn't have been for that missions conference that I attended as a sixth grader and walked down that aisle to serve Jesus when I was challenged, I don't know where I'd be today. So I'm so grateful to those that have been faithful to me. Now, what I love about coming down here on a day that you have potlucks, you know what, by the way, I don't need to go first. That's sad. That's the wrong message. But what I love about it, there is no clock. No one got that. No one moved. What time do you normally finish your service? You've already spent a lot of time up here. I don't know what time or how much time I have. Where am I at? There's a clock. And you're done at what time? 12:30. Okay. So here's what I want to do. I want to give a report because one of the things that I love is when God shows up and multiplies. And so I have a little presentation I'm going to share with you this morning. If we can bring it up on the screen, and I've got Steve's fancy phone, he helped me out as my clicker to forward it. We have our system here. We always come up with things, don't we? Oh, are we up? The phone's up. But I want to share with you what we shared this year at our annual banquet, what God's done in the last year, and give Him the glory and the praise and honor Him, and then we're going to open the Word briefly. But there we go. Well, everything's go. I hope I'm pushing the button, Steve. Come here, my
patience.
Patience.
Trust in you.
The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, gentleness, patience. Okay, so here we are in stewardship. I love to show this one first just to put in perspective because people ask me all the time, when I give to the Lord's work and the mission. And by the way, I always say, you're not giving to the mission. The scripture tells us when you give to the poor, you give to the Lord. And so when you give to support, this is where the funds go. 88% goes directly back into the programs of what we do for the people. Now, why don't you just flip it for me? Can you control it back there?
Yeah.
Steve, you got a great phone. we'll just kind of, you know. So, anyway, this is how many meals we served last year. I always say it starts with a meal. That's why people come to us, because they're hungry. But like Jesus said to the woman at the well, the water that I give you, you will what? Never thirst again. And we start with a meal, but there's much more we want to offer. And that's how many meals we served last year. We served 3 meals a day. We're almost at 1,000 meals a day now that we serve. This means go. And this is how many nights of shelter that we provided last year. We have now 4 shelters. When I came to the mission 31 years ago, we had the men's mission and we had Ogden Hall. And now, believe it or not, if you would have told me that, Phil, yeah, the next umpteen years, 30 years, you'll be looking at 3 women's shelters and 1 men's shelter, you know what I would have told you? You're crazy. Because when I came, all we focused on was men. That was the need. Today, the largest need is women and children. And here's, we give out clothing at our stores. We have 224 men and women that are in a recovery program. A lot of people think the mission is just about feeding and shelter. But for those that want recovery, we have a program where we deal with addictions and I call them the bondages that the Bible speaks about. And we had 224 men, women, and children in our recovery. Those are our 4 shelters that you see up there. Anna Ogden Hall is our women and children's recovery center in Spokane. Then you have the men's mission, the one with the sign and the cross. And then the one with the flag is our brand new center over in Coeur d'Alene for women and children. And it is a recovery center. And then I'm excited to tell you about that other one, because that's one of the things that happened this last year that was a real God miracle. Okay, and then we have our 2 stores. These are our 2. How many have been to our store? They used to be called the Classy Rack, and now they're the Union Gospel Mission Thrift Stores. Our latest, and when I speak of the future, we're hoping to get one in Coeur d'Alene. We're working hard at finding property. These stores provide job training. They provide income to the ministry. It's just a win-win all around, and another way that people can donate goods. So those are our 2 stores. And then we have the... that's how much the stores last year contributed to our ministry, $302,000. And so when you think about it, it's a real win-win. It supports the ministry as well as provides jobs. Then we have our Union Gospel Mission. How many have seen our motors on Auto Row? Okay. And so great place to buy your son or daughter their first car. Our mechanics are real honest, and we tell you everything we know about the cars. And the motors this year, last year, contributed $204,000. And in fact, this was at our banquet time in this last few months. It's just, we're having over 100 cars donated every month, folks. It's been exciting what God's doing. I don't know what next year is going to look like. I think we're going to almost hit, I think we could almost hit $500,000 that comes in from our motors. There you see we have boats, we have motorcycles. If it drives on wheels, people donate it, we sell it. So that's our new latest addition, that building. We added something this year that we've never done. We added certified mechanics and a service department. So why not, when you have to get a new battery or alternator or starter or do something to your car, those things that always surprise you happen, why not come in and do it at the motors? And guess what? It helps serve those that are homeless. So that's something new that we've just started. It's been really exciting to see it take off. That's our showroom, batteries, tires, wheels. And then, again, one of the goals of the motors is to train people and give job experience, just like the stores. Now, this is something that to me is really exciting. I want you to just take a close look at these statistics. Last year, 194 men and women found jobs through the mission. Now, if you are going to end homelessness, it's one thing to feed, it's one thing to clothe, it's another thing to help them deal with their addictions. And we've been down that road where we've done those things, and then the person's sitting there going, now what? Because without a job, they're still what? Homeless. So we have two programs that we focus on, One, recovery, and the other, jobs. And everyone that goes through our recovery program, we have 115 employees that partner with us. So if you come to the mission and say, you know, I'd really like to get into the medical field, guess what? Sacred Heart is a partner with us. So you do an internship to Sacred Heart at the end of the program, and guess what? 80% are being hired where they do their internship. So we're not talking about jobs at Jack in the Box, McDonald's. We're talking about jobs and a career in a field that people want to pursue, which again, we want to motivate them and see that they have potential. One of the things that I was thinking about what you shared, Christine, that I tell people all the time is, when we talk about sowing, why are people so worthy to sow into their lives? And it's because we've all been created in the image of God. We all have tremendous potential to multiply our lives and reflect God. So jobs is important. 194 people last year. And that's exciting. We don't want to just be a part of keeping people homeless. We want them to see their potential. They're created in the image of God, and they have potential. Camp, 479 kids went to our camp this summer, and I think the next pictures show a picture of our camp below Long Lake Dam. And to me, this is one of the most fruitful ministries we have. Churches do outreach in the community, bring the underprivileged kids from single-parent homes. The schools in Spokane have opened their doors and said, come in, tell about this opportunity to our kids. And half of the kids, almost for the last 3 years now, almost 50% of the kids that come to our camp make a decision for Christ. It's a great. And then the churches are doing follow-up, mentoring the kids and staying engaged with the school. And that's why they're so excited about us coming and sharing about our camp. We wouldn't do what we do without volunteers. And if you look at these numbers, they're pretty staggering. We have 455 individuals, and I believe to date now we're up over another 100 more than that. They give four or more hours every week, and they have responsibility, and they show up, and they do so much for us. We wouldn't do it without our volunteers. Now, this is one of the biggest highlights of the year. This is our new crisis shelter in Spokane. One of the things is, as I look at the history of the mission, everything that God's done, there's a miracle behind it. It's a miracle story, and I could just tell them one after another. And I'm going to show you this miracle story here. So we have been trying for the last, go to the next slide, 3 years. We knew this crisis shelter. See that picture? 16 rooms, 60 women, 70 kids were staying in there. Do the math. We had three moms with their kids in the same room. Not the best environment when you're in a crisis. Moms, how would you like it if the other mom's kids screaming and crying in the middle of the night and out of control? Hey, get your kid under control, woman. You know, it's chaos. And as we go on in these slides, you'll see that 70 kids, as we go on, see, here's where we had to sleep, in the overflow, on the floor. Take a good look at that room, because I'm going to come back to it later. That's where we slept them, on the floor. Next slide. And this is a new shelter. We have large, spacious rooms with a bathroom between every room that two rooms get to share. They don't have to go down the hall. They have a nice bathroom that they share. Next slide. So this is it. They would line up outside the one room we made into an office. So counselors and people that came to help out, there was no place to meet one-on-one, and talk with a woman. They'd line up outside and check into this office. So we go to the next slide. Here's the new entry to the new facility. And there's four offices right down there on the main floor right now. This was an old assisted living center. that one day they announced we're closing the door, and they wrote something on the board, and everyone was gone. And we had looked at a piece of land for 4 years to pursue it with the city, and it's an unbelievable story how we kept getting stalled, then a positive stall, and then this was handed to us. It would have cost us $7 to $8 million to build this shelter. We got it for $2 million and put $500,000 into it to remodel it. It was a God thing. Okay, so the next slide is they would eat in their rooms. So you had three moms in the room, all their kids, no dining room. And if we go to the next slide, you'll see that, of course, we have a nice big dining room and kitchen. Go to the next slide. The first night, we moved in right before Christmas. The first night I was there, the meal was nothing great. In fact, I was a little embarrassed by it. Our kitchen hadn't been finally approved. But the ladies were so excited for the first time to be able to set at a table and eat with one another. There's our new kitchen. It's a commercial kitchen. And then this was our former computer lab because they do lessons on computer. And there was this one little room we had, and they'd jam in there. One of the pictures I have shows a child sitting on the mom's lap. Now look at our new computer center that we have. We now have, I think there's about 18 stations. We never had the space to do this. Then if we go to the next slide, this is where they met for Bible study. We could never have all the women come to a Bible study or a chapel service at night. Why? There was no place for the kids. And there wasn't a room big enough to hold them. Now look at our chapel that we have. And you know what I love? I've watched since December, every month, we're seeing more and more women come to know Christ because now we can present the gospel more clearly. Churches can get engaged. It's really exciting. It's just changed the whole spirit and atmosphere. Now, there's where the 70 kids play. Figure that one out, huh? Now, if we go to the next slide, we have a nice fenced-in backyard where the women can go and the kids can go and play, and the women can sit right there in the dining room and look out and watch their kids play. Once again, just to realize how much this would have cost if God handed it to us, they walked out and left everything in the building. They left the dryers, the washers, everything. I mean, it was just a God thing. So go to the next slide. Like I said, there was no place for the kids to go during the chapel service, or even while mom was there. Now we have two large rooms like this for the kids at the shelter. Clinic, we have a medical clinic now for the women at the shelter where doctors and nurses come and volunteer. Exercise always gets the mind going. How many of you are exercising daily? Thank you for that show of hands. That's good. And you know what? Hey, what I love about when I ask that, the people that are, they just went like this, you know. The rest of you, let me speak into your life and my own life. This is the best thing that happened to me. It's a good motivation. You know what this is? Fitbit. It's a good motivation. How many steps you get in a day? Anyway, we got to move on. That's too convicting. Okay, so take a good look at this picture. Take a real good look. When you had 16 rooms, you had 60 women and 70 kids, what do you think those rooms looked like? A disaster. Wall-to-wall beds. How do you think you clean a room that's wall-to-wall beds and stuff shoved under the bunks? They were literally filthy. You have a little bathroom that was a motel that was geared for how many people? Two, and now you got 10 in a room. Guess what those bathrooms look like? So we're sitting here, what do we do with this facility? But God shows up, and it's like, what do you even want to put into a facility like this? Do we just sell it and move on? I want you to look at it today. been completely remodeled. See the new brick? It's got a wainscot, brand new doors. Every room was remodeled, and now each room has two college students in it. Well, you say, Phil, why are you housing college students? Mostly Moody, but some from Eastern, some from Whitworth, some other colleges. These students are working at our Student Impact Center, and they're doing outreach at schools. And so they put in so many hours a week, and we reduce their cost. So what I'm excited about is we're getting the next generation involved in ministry. And so this is our Student Outreach Center. We call our Student Impact Center. I think there might be one more. Yeah, so there was that room, right? Now take a look at what that room looks like today. We took out walls, and we totally... that there was a wall that went right across where that beam is. We opened it all up, and that's where they come and they eat, and they have the students come in there, troubled kids, they work with them. And in the next picture, I think we opened that up into a kitchen, and the students, it's kind of their place that they go and prepare their meals and eat together. So quite a transformation, to say the least, and that's how we're using that new center. I believe that's the last slide, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, that's some exciting things that God has been doing. And we continue to just see Him open up doors to provide. And it's exciting to see who He is and what He does. Now, I got about 5 minutes, maybe 10, if we go a few minutes after noon. And it wouldn't be church without what? A sermon or opening the Word. So, I'm gonna talk about a story in the Bible that you've probably all heard, but one of the things I've been thinking about recently, one of the things, you know, if you're like me, I went to church Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday, three times a week. How long have you boys been in church? Since you were a baby. Great, Mom. Good job. But you know what? When I was his age, I'd heard most of the stories, so you know what I was thinking about? I was thinking about what was going to happen at school that week. What grade are you in? Fifth. What grade are you in? Same. Two fifth graders. How about you? Seventh grade. Well, I was thinking about other things instead of but this morning, you're not going to. So I'm going to keep my eye on you and you. I want you to listen carefully. But how many of you, if I told you this morning, I want to talk about the story of Goliath and David. What would go through your minds right now? I've heard that story before. I'm going to tune out because I know that David wins with a stone. And it's true that most of the stories in the Bible, we've heard them, right? So the story that I'm going to share this morning, I guarantee you've heard it. But let me ask you, why are those stories there? The problem is, when we know the beginning and the end, we skip over the story. You know what we forget? Where do you and I fit into the story? So, if you take the story of David, where do you and I fit into that story? It's when he shows up and you don't know the outcome. Right? So, I want to talk about a story this morning. If you have your Bibles, turn to Luke 18. And this is the setting. Luke 18, verse 35. It's a story that maybe you're familiar with. And you know what the end and what happens. But we've got a man who is a beggar that is sitting alongside of the road who is blind. And if you just stop and put yourself in his situation without knowing what's going to happen, it's just another normal day. And he's getting up, and I don't know who's helping him. I don't know if someone's taking him out there alongside the road. It's somewhere outside of Jericho. And this is kind of an unusual day, but it's a normal day. And I'm just sitting here thinking this morning, how many of you are starting to think about the upcoming week in school, your job, or what's going on? It's just another normal day. That's where you and I are at. And maybe like this beggar who had some problems he couldn't see, we have some problems. It may be finances. It may be our marriage. It may be our employer. Excuse me, we're going to show up and we've had conflict at work. It may be a test we're taking at school. There's something that is hard for us. And this guy had it hard. I mean, every day he had to what? Ask for money. And that's where you and I live this thing called the Christian life, with uncertainty, just like this beggar. And then something happens. It says that a crowd, let me read it to you. The blind man was sitting by the road begging. And now hearing a crowd going by, and it's interesting to me, what's the thing that happens? He what? He doesn't see a crowd because he's what? Blind. But he hears. Now, if you're blind in your senses, there's two things that I'm sure he had that worked really well. Does anyone want to guess what the other one was beside hearing? That's right on. His nose. That guy could smell anything. He probably identified people by their smell. But his hearing would have been extra good. And all of a sudden, there's a crowd of people coming, and he takes note. And what's the first question he asks? Who's in the crowd? What's going on? Because my guess is there's not too many crowds that come by the road. And all we know is that someone told him that who was coming? What's it say here? They told him that Jesus of Nazareth was passing by. All of a sudden, he is probably, we know from this story, he's heard about Jesus, hasn't he? And if you're sitting there and you've got a problem, finances, work, he doesn't just say, oh, it's another day. He goes, here is my opportunity. Because here is the one that I have heard has healed the sick and given sight to the blind. And what is he? Blind. This becomes no longer a normal day, but a special day. Because he what? He hears and sees Jesus is coming. Now, I'm just going to ask you the question, what would you do if you were him? We know what the story says, but what would you have done? Anyone want to tell me? I would have done something different than what he did. What would you have done? Well, you can talk to me. I mean, hey, hold it. Time out, Craig. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. But when the pastor was up here and he was blowing it, making mistakes, sorry, Pastor Man, some lady back here was telling you he can't have visitors. They were talking to him, right? Yeah, so talk to me. What would you have done? You're there. You can't see. What were you going to say, Craig?
I was going to say just kind of move toward or cry out.
Cry out?
Try to get some attention.
Try to get some attention. Is there anybody else in here doing anything different?
I just be depressed, but that's
the wrong
answer.
You would what?
Just be depressed.
You would be depressed. Okay. He had some hope because he knew Jesus could heal him. But I'm telling you, if it was me, I wouldn't have been sitting. I would have got up and tried to figure out how to get to it. I wouldn't have just hollered out, but I don't know. That's just me. But he hollers out, right? Now, here's where it gets interesting. I'm going to take you from being the man, because that's the life that you and I live. That's who we are daily. We're in his shoes. Now I'm going to switch and say you're someone else. Because now you are going to be in the crowd. You're going to be in the crowd that just came from the other city where Jesus healed people. And you're kind of, I think of this as, forgive me for using this illustration, nobody shoot me, please forgive me. Let's just suppose President Trump was here this morning. If he arrived here in Colfax, what would be around him? Security. You wouldn't get near him, right? They're all protecting him. So your Bible says the followers of Jesus, I call it the security of Jesus. They're there to protect him. But they also know what authority and what President Trump could do for your city. He could hand you all kinds of money, bring you business here. He could do a lot, right? You know, they knew that Jesus could heal this guy. And yet, what do? They go over and they say, what? We're security. Shut up. So if we put ourselves in that role, would you and I have told that guy to be quiet? Most of us say, no, I've never done that. But why would we tell him to be quiet? Talk to me.
He's just a beggar.
He's just a beggar. Right? What else?
Don't bother him.
Don't bother him.
They wouldn't want to associate with him.
No association. Don't want to be seen with him because he probably smells. He's probably dirty. What else comes to your mind?
There's a certain role that he's playing. We all have certain standing in society. And
let's keep him there.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're above that. And he's been there forever. We just assume there's nothing better for his life. Yeah. We forget the one that you and I are supposedly with, a follower of Christ. We forget his what? His power. His ability to transform the life. And we get into our own little world, you know. I was reminded this week in a passage I was reading. When Jesus fed the 5,000, they got in the boat, and it says they quickly forgot what he had done. You know, I have been at the mission 31 years, and I have seen God do miracle after miracle after miracle, and I'm amazed how often I forget what he has done. I'm no different than these followers. I see what he could do to help someone, and yet I say he deserves to be there, or the choices they've made. And the list goes on. So when I tell this story or I think of this story, I could put myself in the seat of the beggar, and I can also put myself in the seat of the follower of Christ. I think it's an indictment that the NIV says the followers of Jesus. Not only your translations say that, but the followers of Jesus told him to be quiet. That's a really mild interpretation. I don't envision they walk around and says, you need to be quiet. I just don't see that. But then something amazing happens. Jesus hears him and he stops and he says what? What he yelled out is, Son of David, have what? Now I want you to think about this, because he asked for what?
Mercy.
What is mercy? Yeah. And mercy is something we don't deserve. It's a lot like grace. He acknowledged his what? Need. That's a challenge today when I speak about helping the poor, because one of the hardest things to happen, this blind man recognized he had what? A need. Today, oftentimes because of the bondage of sin, because of addictions, drugs, people often do not understand their need. Do you want me to tell you an example of how relevant that is to me in the last 3 weeks? How many of you knew that we had World Homeless Day this month. It was in October. We went out on the streets. I was with the mayor of our city, and they have a new camping ordinance about camping out. And he says, Phil, I just saw three guys over here camping out, and I called to report that in, but guess what? The business has to do it, not an individual. He says, I want to show you. So we walked over there, and I go, this is my opportunity. Because quite often, if we're not around homeless people, are we comfortable going up and talking to them? No. So we were just going to walk by, and he wanted to show me, and I thought to myself, this is a great opportunity to educate the mayor about chronic homelessness and people that are choosing to live on the streets. So as we went over to this little corner, there was three guys there. And the first thing we observed as we walked up, because they had a blanket around, you couldn't see in real clear, were two prosthetic legs sitting there and a gentleman sitting. And he talked to us, the others kind of buried, one guy looked out from underneath the blanket and then covered himself back up. So we engaged in conversation. And I should say I did. But anyway, the mayor knew more about prosthetic legs than I did. I knew nothing about them. So he kind of looked at him and be like me saying, those are Adidas, or those are Nike shoes. I mean, he knew the brand and everything. He said to the guy, how do you like them? He says, oh, they're wonderful. They were prosthetic legs attached to the knee. And as we visited a while, and then later on, I says, so do you mind telling me a story? And oh, by the way, I asked him, which I wanted the mayor to hear, I asked him, men, why do you not go in and stay in a shelter? It's getting cold out. Why don't you come in where you can sit down at a table and have a nice meal? And you know what they told me? They says, we don't want to sleep in a shelter because people steal your stuff there. Well, I looked around and there really wasn't a lot to be stolen. And to be real honest, that doesn't really happen in a shelter, but I've heard so many different stories, and it's okay. There's reasons why people don't come into a shelter. But then I asked this man, I says, do you mind telling me how you lost your legs? And you know what he told me? Frostbite, sleeping out at night. So when we talk about this story here with Jesus, do you realize this man recognized his need? One of the most frustrating things is in the hardness of the heart and the bondage of sin, unless God somehow works in the heart, they don't cry out for mercy. This man recognized his need and wanted help. You know what I've learned about working with the homeless? You cannot help someone that does not want help. You can have the finest hospitals in town, but if a person doesn't want to go there, will they go there? That's why we need to pray that God would show up in the life of a person and do what? Change that hardened heart and make it soft. And that's what I love that we get to see, because he does that. And I always say all the time that it often starts with a simple meal. Because that's when someone relationally relates and loves on them, their heart becomes soft. So this man cries out and says, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. And now, here is the most amazing thing in the story to me. What does Jesus say? Sure, I'll heal you. No. What's he say? What do you want me to do? Jesus, can't you see he's blind? Did Jesus know he was blind? So let me ask you a question. Why does Jesus ask him, what do you want me to do? Because Jesus does not invade any of our lives and do what we do not allow him to do. It is the hardest thing to understand in helping those that we serve. You can't force your way in. Jesus doesn't even force his way on this man. He says, what do you want? So, going back to where we began, the story. What I want to challenge you this morning, when I said, is it finances? Is it in your ploy? You're that blind man sitting alongside of the road. What do you want Jesus to do for you? He can only do it when we what? Tell him. He only shows up when we invite him in and we let him know our need. And that's what I love about Jesus. He doesn't push himself on us. He sits back as a gentleman and waits for us to ask him. And then look what happens in his story. He what? We know the end. And that's where we often go. But you today might be like that blind man. You're still waiting on Jesus to what? Show up, touch, and heal. And that's what I love. And then I love this story. It says, after he says, what do you want? He said, Lord, I want to regain my sight. Did you catch that regain word? What's that tell you? He wants sight. So he knew what he missed out on. And sometimes I think as Christians, we've experienced sweet fellowship with God, and then we've kind of slowly lost it. And maybe that prayer this morning is, Lord, I want to regain that fellowship, that moment by moment, hearing your voice, walking with you, that sensitivity that I once had. I want to regain that. And then I love what Jesus says, receive it. Receive it. And then immediately he regained his sight and he began to what? Follow Jesus. And that's what I love about Jesus, is that he's one that we want to follow, because guess what? That's where real life is. In a world that so many other things are tugging at, so many other messages being sent, the real joy is in following Jesus. I've often asked the question, haven't you? How long did he follow Jesus? Was he at the crucifixion? How did this change his life? I know this, that for many of us, we start out, we follow Jesus, and then what happens? We become like the followers of Jesus. And so unless Jesus shows up every day, and what I love about him is his mercy and his grace. And that's really the message of the mission, that we understand that we have people that come to us from all walks of life, every circumstance. My favorite question to ask the women when I start the Bible studies at Ogg and Coeur d'Alene, I rotate, is tell me about your history, your family, tell me about your spiritual background, and tell me what brought you here. As I listen to those stories, some of them have been raised in the church. Some of them have walked away. Others, if I experienced what they had experienced, I'd be right where they're at. You know that almost the majority of them have been abused as young girls. No matter what the circumstances, how does that impact their life? How do we show them the love of Jesus? And so as I think about the message that we have a message of what? Mercy, grace, and a Jesus that shows up. So I just want to say, Pastor Mays, thank you to you and this church. And over the years, so many of you are so faithful monthly to support the work that we do so that we can do what? Give people Jesus. Because that's who transforms lives. Now, I was supposed to tell you about the barrel. The barrel's out there. Their instructions are with it. By the way, I remember coming down here and the whole foyer's full of stuff. Not that, now, I'm not saying you're not filling the foyer. You weren't told to break it. But, and we'd load up the truck, and then I had to stop loading it up because I couldn't get it in my little pickup. So you started bringing it up for us. And so now what we do is in the barrel, we really encourage you to bring those number 10 cans so we don't sit there and open cans all day. And I think we were challenged in church to go for one thing, that you all get the same thing. And the good thing is I don't have to come back for the barrel, do I? Huh? You'll take it. But that's just a way that this month you can respond and help out the mission. And again, it's whatever God leads you to do, and to know that we're there for those people alongside the road that need Jesus. So thank you for your partnership. It's been a great partnership all these years. And let's just close in prayer, shall we? Jesus, thank you that it's not a guy sitting along the road. It's each one of us in this room. And there's different needs that we have. And I thank you that when we truly speak that need to you, you come over and pay attention to us. And more importantly, you answer that need. And God, it doesn't always happen in the way that we see. I know the blind man was healed, but you do it in ways that we oftentimes don't understand, and later on we do understand. So thank you that you're a God of healing. You're a God that wants to be involved in our lives daily. And thank you for our time in this house together in your presence this morning.